Yeah, first time in franchise history for them. They've
always
been at that cusp and have never been able to get over the hill.
Right, and it's really awesome to see it. I know we're going to discuss bandwagon fans, which I'm, again, going to be one, starting, 6 months ago when the game started. So I'm going to be one for the rest of the season, but we're going to talk about that on our TV show.
Seven possible games left
yes,
of it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I'm that guy. I'm going to be that guy, and it's going to be a bit of a social experiment, but it'll be fun.
I'm glad you're open with this and understanding where you're going. And
Yeah, no, it'll be a good time.
Conscious of your decisions.
So let's, I don't think we should put this off anymore. Huge, huge, huge Game 7. Everyone's been talking about it.
Best thing in sports.
Yep. Starting in 30 minutes. Whether it's a Stanley Cup Game 7 or an NBA Game 7, MLB Game 7, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I'll tune in. I don't care if I have an interest in the two teams or not. I'm always watching because anything could happen and there's so much on the line.
Oh, no doubt. It's so just the tension is right off the bat right there. You don't need anything more than just knowing win or go home.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, you have the whole single eliminations in football and in the NCAA playoffs, but the Game 7, that aspect, just knowing going into that, each won three games.
Yeah,
it's been a slugfest the entire time.
You battle to a draw,
and
there's one game to decide it all. And I mean, this is what I love about sports. Unlike any other form of entertainment, for the most part, that I can really think of, it's not subjective in that way. Most of sports is subjective. Who's the greatest of all time? Who's the greatest player on this team? Who's the greatest shooter of all time? Whatever it may be. But there's one thing that's not subjective, and it's who won. And, these players, unlike actors, musicians, or other forms of entertainment, they don't get a take two, a take three. You have that one game, and this was what Game 7 exemplify, is this do-or-die situation. And I think it's fascinating to watch in any sport. It's awesome.
Oh, best thing ever, no doubt.
Yeah,
and not to mention, you have the fact that no matter what you're doing, it's completely unscripted. You don't know where it's going. Granted, there might be conspiracies behind that in certain way that
Lakers,
things
Kings,
are called.
Yeah, Kings fans remember
they
conspiracies
do.
And Game 7s. But
even then, it still has to be played out. And there is still, either win or you go home. That's it. And we had an awesome – this series in particular has just been – one for the ages. Definitely is going to go down as one of the best series ever. I think just because of how it's gone about, how close people have come to being knocked out. 3-1, the Warriors are down, and they came back, fought two in a row, won at OKC.
Yeah, let's talk about that game six.
Spectacular game six.
So I didn't get to watch it live. I was away at Eagle Lake camping with Amy, the lovely Amy's family, the men in her family at least. And I was fortunate enough because I have no service up there. So for all of you listening that try to text me, email me, and you didn't get a response, I wasn't ignoring you, but I'll deal with you each individually later. But he pulls up in his truck. He has XM radio, XM Sirius XM. So he's got signal, and we're listening to the last 4 minutes. And listening to basketball is really difficult. It's not like baseball where it's a lot easier to describe. But, man, it was a really cool experience because you had 30 men surrounding one truck pretty much. Everyone intently tuned in, whether they were a Warriors fan or not, because they like sports. And because this is, for a lot of men, this is our soap opera, right?
Yeah.
And
this is our bonbon time right,
right
now.
This is elimination games. There's nothing like it. There's in other forms of entertainment that we were just discussing. There's nothing like it. And so it was a cool experience to see that. But I came home late last night and stayed up watching the game, and I just finished watching the fourth quarter right before I came down here. And to see it was even more incredible than listening to it.
It was spectacular.
I was reading that, and I believe this is a stat from Elias, that a team going into the fourth quarter with 6 minutes left, when the other team's in the penalty and they're down seven, they have a 95% chance of losing the game.
That's a pretty big number right there.
And
that's a really, really minutiae type of stat there.
And it's,
but it's pretty interesting as well. It is.
Well, all the signs, essentially the point is, all the signs pointed to the Warriors should have lost.
Yeah, they definitely should have. And I mean, Klay Thompson said no.
Yeah,
those
shots.
Oh my gosh, that three on the top.
Oh.
With his hand in his face where he just wasn't even set.
Yeah.
And just drilled it.
The one when he came off the screen and he was turning the opposite way of the basket, falling out of bounds, and the ball before he was even squared up, the ball was out of his hands.
Yeah.
And it was nothing but Drano. I mean, it didn't touch the rim. It just barely tickled the twine, as Marv Albert used to say. I mean, it was incredible to see what Clay, to hear it was one thing, but to see it and the shots he was making.
Yeah. And I mean, he kept them, because that third quarter was that turning point for the one time. And
yeah, he kept them in it.
Yeah, because the third quarter, they were about to out of it. And I was like, the way Curry was playing, I was like, yo, they're done. It's done. They're not, Curry's not shooting the ball well. Clay wasn't even hitting his shots up until like maybe halfway through the third. That's when he made like 1 3. I was like, okay, maybe get something going. Hit another one. I was like, okay, he's getting the rhythm now. Can you keep it alive? Can you keep the defense? Can you stop him from scoring? And they were keeping him involved. Like, they were still getting points, but they're getting threes.
Yeah.
And that's the big thing that they're able to do, is if they do get down, they can hit threes, and threes get you back into the game a lot quicker. Because you can still give up a point, still give up a shot on the other end, but you're still getting an extra point on them. Mm-hmm. So they kept him in it. He did. Totally did. Because without him in that third quarter, they wouldn't have had it. And then Curry was able to finish it up in the fourth, and it was a great game to watch.
I mean, you don't get many team wins of that magnitude ever, whether you're rooting for the team or just in general. We don't see that very often. Again, that's why they had a 95% chance of losing, because those things don't happen. And see the resilience of the Warriors to come back and to win that game when they really had no business winning it was a great sign for the Warriors. And I think, furthermore, if you're a Warriors fan, one thing to should maybe give you a little bit of hope is we're now in a game seven, and the Warriors have yet to play completely good game from start to finish.
Yeah,
they haven't done it. Even when they beat the Thunder, and was it game two, I believe, when they won by almost 30 or something like that,
they haven't been themselves.
They didn't look good. They weren't moving the ball, and they still haven't looked great. Now, what I will say about game six is their defense seemed to look a lot better. And if Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant want to take that many shots and not move the ball and play ISO ball, great. I'm all for it, because that works to the Warriors' advantage. What has been killing the Warriors all season was getting 10 from Steven Adams, was getting 14 from Ibaka, was getting 20 points from Deion Waiters. I mean, those second-tier players having big contributions, that's what killed them. And I think that's the interesting thing, is they stopped moving the ball in the Thunder again. Stopped moving the ball in the last couple games. And it's been obvious. And the Warriors have played big with keeping Bogues in the game, getting him a lot more playing time. They've stayed big instead of trying to go small, because that just hasn't worked against
them. Yeah, they haven't. I mean, like I said, I think from the get-go, I said how the size was going to be a big factor.
Yep, and you called that before the series even started.
And the OKC was just rebounding the crap out of the ball. Like, they were on the boards are ridiculous on how much they're getting. Not only that, offensive rebounds. And you're giving them second-chance points. And even if you get, like, not that many, but you're still giving them a second opportunity when you stopped them already. And that was just, that always was killing them. Like, every single time, like, they'd make a stop, it's like, oh, you untimely offensive rebound, which is second-chance points. So you need to play, keep it big. And Bogues was out there for a long period of time. I remember thinking, I was like, man, Bogues is still going out there right now. And it was, you need to do that, because you cannot get out rebounded that much and still keep it alive. Because the moment you give him second chance points that many, it's just, you can't give him that opportunity. You have to give him one and done.
Right.
And Durant and Westbrook finally kind of took that bait. Iggy was doing great defense on KD in that game. I mean, he was hounding him the entire time when he was out on the floor. So,
and that's one adjustment I wouldn't be surprised to see, is to see Iggy start in Harrison Barnes' place. Barnes hasn't played horrible. He hasn't played great. He's always
a timely three every once in a while.
And he's a really good defender. Not exceptionally great, but really good, solid defender. But Iggy's a much better defender than him. Obviously, more veteran.
Yeah.
A little plays under control a bit more, and I mean, obviously, he was Finals MVP last year. He has that, I don't want to say it factor, but he has that X factor. It factor, X factor. No, he just has the experience where he doesn't necessarily fold under pressure. The moment never seems to be too big for him, and we saw that the other night as a whole with the Warriors. The moment didn't seem to escape them, where a lot of teams, they get in that fourth quarter. And that third quarter, like you mentioned, with Klay Thompson, and the game begins to slip away. And the Warriors just kept chipping away and just hanging around. And I thought that was a key going into game six, is they don't need to get out to a 10-point lead going into half. They just need to be in the game.
I mean, this is honestly like a classic Warrior win right here, this right. past game six, because they do that so many times to this to your fans. They get behind, and they're just like, oh, man, what's going on? But then they just claw their way back.
Right.
Like I said, they just hit those timely threes. They just kind of bank on the fact that Klay or Steph will get hot. And one of them usually does. The times they lost, it's because either of them neither didn't. But usually one of them's going to have a night.
Yeah.
And Klay just, he's like I said, he went off until Curry could find his stroke.
Yeah.
And Curry did eventually find it, and he hits got into his kind of shimmy and shaking and kind of looking like a little bit of the Curry we're used to, and the one that he has won the MVP twice in a row right now.
Right.
And being a unanimous MVP. He's finally kind of, you've seen it, all right, maybe this game six is a great stepping stone for them. This is the adversity that they're looking for right now. But I mean, it's awesome to see that happening because we now get another game, which is best for us.
And yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned last week when I was talking about Curry's health and not sure if he was healthy because he's not driving to the hoop at the same percentage he was during the season. And I don't want to break out all the numbers because that'll get really, really boring. But there are some shocking numbers on how often Curry's going to the hoop and how ineffective he is. Let's just put it this way. He's shooting 20%. He was shooting 62.5% in the key during the season. He's shooting 42% during the playoffs. But you mentioned that it could be the injury, it could be bothering him, or it could be the fact that every time he goes to the rack, he's got to deal with 3 7-footers.
Yeah.
And that was a great point. You said being big was going to make a difference in the series, and you did see Curry drive the ball a bit more, still not to his average. He usually gets to the rack about 10 times a game and finishes on a fairly regular basis, and he's doing it about 5 times a game. But you saw him do it a little bit more, at least cutting to the basket, getting some shots at point blank range, or you know, driving and kicking. And so I think for the Warriors to pull this victory off tonight, so yeah, we talked game six, let's look ahead tonight. For the Warriors, I think the keys are obviously defense and rebounding, but also moving the ball. And they got to be able to penetrate and kick because that's what they've done all season.
Yeah.
And if they can do that, they'll win. And they should win.
I mean, like I said, they have the home court advantage. That's home courts. They love that. I mean, yeah. They're great. They play great at their. And granted, OKC has won on that court before, and they won convincingly.
Yep.
But I do have to give the edge to the home team here because how well they can play. And you finally feel like they're finally finding that footing again. Wow, yeah. I said finally a lot right now. Finally, I'm oversaying this statement right now.
Yeah, but no, I just think that this is going to be, Vegas has them at a 6.5-point favorite. Curry came out earlier today and said home court doesn't guarantee us anything. And I think that would be the fear, at least for a lot of Warriors fans out there, is simply that you worry about overconfidence. But I don't think at this team, they have a championship pedigree, right? I don't think they're going to overlook the Thunder and be like, oh,
yeah,
we should just walk over them because we're at home and we have the momentum back.
They're smart enough to have it. They have a coach in Steve Kerr that is one of the better West coaches out there, just in terms of his ability to kind of stay a level head. He is... Mm-hmm. Always seems like he's calm, cool, and collected, you know?
Yeah.
Even when he's, like, fired up, you still think Steve Kerr, he's just, you know, innocent white guy. He's just kind of chilling, you know? Like, he's just cool about himself. And, like,
he
see that in his
like
press conference.
He looks like every middle-class dad in America.
Exactly, yeah. Like, he just needs a pair of...
Middle-class Caucasian dad in America, I should clarify. But
he just needs, like, a polo shirt tucked into some shorts with
some cargo shorts, yes.
Yeah, exactly. It's all he's missing. But and he keeps it super cool out there. And having that level-headedness, especially his experience he's had with the Bulls, obviously, and their runs that they've gone on.
Spurs.
Did I say Spurs? Wow, Bulls.
No, both.
Oh, Spurs. I'm sorry. The Bulls and the Spurs. Yes, yeah. Okay. Having that, I mean, he's had Greg Popovich and he's had Phil Jackson as his head coaches before.
Right. Not bad mentors.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one's a Zen master. The other one doesn't like to talk to anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, they're both, again, calm, cool, collected guys about them, you know? And I think like having that experience right there is, I really got to give him, again, give it to the Warriors on that. Because, yeah, you have Billy Donovan. He's done a really good job with this team. And it's granted, you have two of the best players in the NBA on that team, so you should do good with this team. But, like I said, you need to have a leader like Steve Kerr to be able to kind of get you through a situation like that, to make sure you are grounded, especially when you are the home team, where you do think you might have that edge, where you think, hey, there's no edge in this game right now. We're 3-3. We're as even as can be at this point. We just need one last great game from all of us, and we're through.
Well, either way, we're guaranteed a fun series, at least a series with a lot of star power in the finals. Regardless if it's OKC or Golden State, the storylines already, either way, there's revenge in the storylines because OKC lost to LeBron, a different team when he was playing for Miami when LeBron won his first title, in a series, the closest series that's been decided in 5 points in the history of basketball, if you ask me, because even though, and I know I'm going back a few years, but even though that series was decided in five, every game was close, I believe, except for game five when Miami clinched it.
Yeah, you're talking obviously of Miami and OKC.
Yes, in 2011 or was it 2012? Maybe 2012.
Yeah, 2012, because 2011 he lost to Dirk.
That's right.
Yeah.
So you have that factor. You have Russell Westbrook and KD against LeBron and...
I mean, their chance to actually get one right now, and I mean, it's there definitely are so many like storylines possible for either way you go right now. And like you said, star power galore everywhere we look.
Right. I mean, if it's Golden State, a rematch from last year, and now
they're trying to solidify the season that they had. Which
right.
They kind of need to. Like, they
well, yeah, because of all the doubters and all the naysayers. Well, they got lucky, and in anything in life, any opportunity. Any good, you know, any success, you found some good fortune along the way. But I think that the Warriors really, obviously, if they make it, are really going to be out to prove that it wouldn't have mattered if Kyrie and K-Love were out there.
Yeah.
They were going to win that series anyway. So either way, I think that I know for a fact that the storylines are going to be great. We should have some really great basketball to look forward to, but we're still overlooking what should be awesome tonight, no matter how it turns out. I may cry if the Warriors lose, and I won't tell anyone about it, but and go into hiding for the next few weeks and get really depressed, but I'll still...
I'm gonna dig you out and make sure to see if those tears coming out, because I just want to know if you are gonna cry, because that would I'm gonna have to hold that over you.
I haven't cried over someone losing since I was like 5 years old, and the Niners lost to the Cowboys, and then I realized crying over sports is really stupid.
Yeah,
because they aren't crying for me ever. They don't even know who I am. This is dumb. But I mean, you know, it will be really sad. I've never been this attached to a team, or been, I don't know if attached is the right word, but, you know, obviously you've known me for a while.
Yeah.
The Warriors have always been my team, and you've gone through it with the Lakers, nowhere near as long as the Warriors have, but you've gone through it where, and I think that's to my theory of why Lakers fans, for the most part, love Kobe so much, is because they did go through a time with Kobe when they were trash. And you go through those times when you struggle with the team you root for when they're bad, and then they start doing well. The payoff is so much greater.
It totally is, yeah. Because like, you earned it at that point,
right?
You felt like it. And I mean, like, kind of going on that little note right there of, you know, when teams kind of get bad, you're sticking with them. But I honestly was feeling when the Warriors were on the brink of elimination that there was a certain turn in the culture and how they viewed the Warriors.
Yes.
Like, there was just this automatic, like, let's maybe the Warriors aren't as great as we think they are. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm not as big of a Warriors fan as I was because they were really good and I like the fact that they had this great win and I can root for a winning team right now.
Right.
And that term bandwagon fan is being tossed around right now. And not to say, I understand a bandwagon fan, someone who's not really maybe a fan of the sport. They jumped in on the Warriors because they're a good squad. And you're in the Bay Area maybe, or you're just getting into the game. And you pick them because they're winning. I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're the type of person that just goes from winning team to winning team. That just really irks me right there.
Really and grinds my gears.
It so grinds my gears right there. And one of the reasons that this brings it up to me is because on game six, a game that was vital to the Warriors season, obviously they needed to win it to stay alive. You think that, you know, your local sports pub where has many games have been witnessed by many fans and they jam pack in there for the finals games and Warrior games in particular, that this place would be packed. And it wasn't. I was over at Bella's sports pub watching the game, and there were empty tables there. And I was a little disappointed because earlier that day, I was going to say, maybe people are staying home watching the games. They don't come out for the bars, which I get it. You're a fan that doesn't like to go out to the bars to watch games for your teams. You prefer to...
I'd rather watch a team where I don't have a...
a rooting interest in it. You go in there. Exactly. Right. Since while I was at the bar, Warriors fun to watch. They're not my team. I can still watch it at a bar.
Sure.
I don't have to watch the game to, you know,
right.
I can be in that atmosphere.
Right, right.
But earlier that day was quite possibly was the actual Super Bowl. And when I say the actual Super Bowl, that's the Super Bowl for real football, soccer, where the Champions League final was earlier that Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And Bella Sports Pub is a pub that's known for having big soccer atmospheres there.
Sure.
And that place was jammed, packed for a soccer game.
Right.
Jammed, packed. Couldn't get a seat, standing room only at that point in time.
Sure.
If you got there when the game started, you were too late.
Yeah.
So I was like, so people do come out for big games.
Right.
They do come out for big games. But I was just really upset because an area that claims to be very Warriors heavy, you would think that there would be a better rooting interest out there, especially for a game that is this important to you. Maybe you don't have to be at the bar. I don't really care. I'm not saying you should be at a bar watching them.
You're
there,
not encouraging.
You just. I feel like there was such a drop. Once the Warriors had that facing elimination, people just kind of slightly turned their back at them. Like, oh, maybe I'm not a big Warriors fan. Yeah, they're all right. I like them.
Yeah.
But.
Well, and I mentioned last week on the show how many people were quick on social media to remind me of the former tweets and Instagrams I put out about the Warriors season. And it was like, okay, first of all, the Warriors had undeniably an amazing season, potentially, at least record-wise, the best ever. So what I was putting out was a fairly obvious statement.
Yeah.
I wasn't going over the top and saying, I never even said this is the greatest team of all time. I would just simply put out stats that I found interesting, blah, blah, blah. But I don't want to get into a whole sob story about how people are mean to me on Twitter.
Well, but, we will.
Yeah, you know, that's just that's the world we live in today. So I don't really care about that. What I found funny was how many people came out and said the Warriors were frauds. You know, the Warriors, this is who they really were. They're beating up on bad teams all season. Which is just stupid to me because those bad teams are now good.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, they faced everyone in the NBA.
They did beat OKC
multiple times.
Three times and lost zero times during the regular season. So it does matter.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Yes, if they don't win a championship, that's completely tainted and it will actually become a detrimental thing to the Warriors and how they're viewed. And they're
especially in the eyes
artists.
Of people like that, because that's how they always view it. Like, if you've had this great of a season, they feel
sure.
you have, they can't separate the two, obviously. When if you just take the regular season as a whole, as it is technically supposed to be viewed, because it's,
right.
you know, once you have the regular season, it's over with and you have your playoffs, and that's a different thing. But you always connect the two because it's all one season. But if you just look at that regular season as a whole, it was tremendous. I mean,
right.
the best we've ever seen. We cannot say we've seen it, but no, we've never seen one team win that many games.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I found was so interesting was my statements were fairly obvious ones. I wasn't going out on a limb here saying, wow, this was an incredible run for these guys. You know, we should take a moment to really recognize what they accomplished during the regular season. And if OKC does win, the Warriors should absolutely catch some flack. But I don't think it should be, you know, let's crucify this team. And I realize, you know, my biases are obviously involved, and I'm trying my best to remove myself from those biases. But I'm telling you, they should catch some flack. But at the same time, if they lose tonight, OKC did a hell of a job.
They would have beat a
67-team win and a 73-team win in back-to-back series. That's never happened before, you know? And so but in sports, we always, instead of having to come out and say, you know, talk about how great the winner played, we have to first crucify the loser. Let's just take a look at your Carolina Panthers, the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Everyone just wanted to talk about Cam Newton, I don't want to say no one. But the storyline wasn't how incredible that Denver Bronco defense was. It was Cam Newton's behavior before and after the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, him not diving for a football and this and that, which is interesting. But I don't think it's as interesting as, wow, Denver just won a Super Bowl with a quarterback who shouldn't be starting in the NFL anymore.
Yeah, I mean,
it isn't now.
It's so sad that we always do jump to, we like to see Goliath fall.
Yeah.
More than we like to see David rise up or something like that.
Well, it's easier to be negative.
Yeah, it totally is. I mean, it's totally much easier to say what is bad about the situation, because that's a blatant right there.
Sure.
You did see, you know, a guy who was feeling like he was on top of the world fall down, and
yep.
that brought a lot of joy to people, it feels like. And that's sad that, I don't want to say it brings joy to the people, but it feels like it does, because the way people go after you
it's all the time. It's an odd thing. Man.
Yeah.
It is an odd thing.
But I'm saying, if you want to do that, be careful. Let the Warriors have the season out first before we start jumping off this prototypical bandwagon that we're all riding right now.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't agree more. I think it'll be really interesting regardless. No matter how it goes, I think what we're going to witness on the court over the next couple weeks, at least week and a half minimum, is going to be really interesting. A lot of storylines, like we mentioned. Whatever happens tonight will be interesting regardless of the outcome. And, you know, we still get at least a week and a half of hoops left, and
I mean, it's going to be the best. Finals definitely for the ages right now. We got it.
I mean, at least on paper.
Yeah,
regardless, and either way it goes, it will be interesting. And I'm looking forward to it. But yeah, we've just spent about 20 minutes talking Warriors.
Yeah.
We have to wrap the show over the next 5 minutes. I did want to mention the Giants been playing really well somehow. I don't know. How in the hell did they lose to the Braves?
I was going to say,
because no one loses to the Braves.
I was going to bring that up, but I'm glad you did.
I mentioned earlier on the show a few weeks back that the Braves had a point this season, this stat may be true, had the seventh most victories at Turner Stadium, which is their home field. So the Braves are trash, and the Giants lost to them. But other than that, the Giants have been playing really well, 8-2 over their last 10. You know, and
you guys have had Mad Buns and pitching really well. Johnny Cueto, great second,
pickup.
Yeah, great pickup.
God,
for you guys.
He's
looking,
pickup.
He's looking really good, and it looks like he's blending really well with the clubhouse in general.
I love pitchers that have dreads. I don't know why.
I mean, dreads in general, I think, are just the
they're
way
cool.
I miss
they're just cool.
Andrew McCutchen, he doesn't have dreads anymore, right?
He
shaved,
no, yeah,
he got
he
rid
cut
of them.
Off,
yeah,
it made
like,
me
why
sad.
Did you do that? Yeah, come on, buddy, get
yeah.
the dreads back right there. I love
the dreads, especially in baseball.
Yeah, especially because it's in a baseball cap. I don't know. There's something
yeah,
about
something
it.
Something cool about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's right on. So I mean, I hate to, obviously right on the Giants getting Johnny Cueto looking well.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Smart got a little roughed up today by the Braves. Don't.
The shock.
Yeah, but, a little odd.
But their pitching stuff overall has looked really good. Kaner, you know, maybe we'll see.
And their lineup in general, you guys have a lot of young studs right now.
Yeah.
And Belt's finally coming around. Hopefully he's just injury prone,
sure.
Which don't, you know, get better, bud.
So I completely missed it. Hold on. I want to mention this. I know we're running out of time here, but I did want to briefly mention what Clayton Kershaw's been doing. I know you've been following a lot closer than I have, because that's who your
that's
allegiance
my boy, obviously.
Is with.
And,
but I know the one stat that I looked at last night on Instagram, I was like, no, that's not real. And then I had to actually look it up, even though it was posted from SportsCenter's Instagram. But he has 100 Ks and 5 walks.
I mean, it's one of
how is that possible?
It's kind of weird to say that he was the best pitcher in baseball. It's easy to say that, I think. I can say that with confidence in my voice. And I think he just got better, which is, like, scary,
yeah.
I feel. Because he is posting up a ridiculous – his first start of the season is ridiculous right now. His numbers are minuscule. He was having a .66 whip last time I checked. That was last week. He had one more start. So it might have affected that right there. I mean, his Ks per walk percentage, like you said, he was 100 Ks, 5 walks. Granted, he's got a couple more Ks now, but that's 20 Ks to walks. That's a ridiculous number right there. And the next closest person, I mean, I remember people would say, oh, Arias is having a great season. His, just say, K to walk ratio last time I saw was 3.4.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, it's like compared to what everyone else.
Well,
the next
Arrieta,
closest person was like, I think 8, and I think it's Bartolo Colon.
And I know neither one of us are taking anything away from what Arrieta is doing, because it's incredible.
But
look at that run support compared to what the Dodgers are giving.
The Dodgers
giving
don't give him anything.
I mean,
it's he's winning games because he does have a great offense behind him, and he's got a great arm, no doubt about it. But Kershaw's doing it pretty much without the
and
offense.
And who was the 19-year-old they brought up?
Julio Urias. Yeah,
he's 19. He's a starting pitcher. That's what? How did
like
you?
I said, no service.
He had a
short outing. Didn't get out of the third. Okay. Had 81 pitches. So you know he's still learning the ropes. Got
he's
sent
19.
Right. Yeah, he did get sent right back down though.
Oh, he
after
did?
Yeah,
oh, I didn't know.
He was just making a spot start for one of the Alex Wood who's starting tonight.
Okay,
or today I should say. But it's
still cool to see.
Yeah, 19-year-old dude. I mean, again, I did say I got
was
my
Sandy
license
the
at
Colfax.
Eight.
The last 19-year-old that pitched or 18-year-old.
He's at least the last Dodger.
Yeah.
lefty in particular.
Right, right.
I don't know if it's baseball like in general, but
I'm not 19 old enough to know these starting, things off the top of my head. I would have to research them.
Yeah, a 19-year-old starting a baseball game.
Cool.
What were you doing at 19? I was...
Oh, man. I can't talk about that on the radio. No. I was kind of going to class and hanging out with my buddies a lot.
I don't even know what that means, but I don't want to go there.
Okay. I was having a really good time. I had my own house at 19, so let's leave it at that. I was the only one with my own house.
We don't have to just imagine what the 19-year-olds are doing when, you know, in this town, okay?
Yes, yeah. Right. And definitely not starting for the Dodgers.
No.
So, it is time for us to go. Before we go, want to shout out the sponsors one more time. Say Hey is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Pullen Cyclery, providing self-propelled transportation and non-polluting